again and welcome to the Ramble Room. This is the girls' day. The boys are off doing whatever boys do, which is why we're going to talk about them while they're not here.
Perfect. We set this up just like I intended.
And then they'll listen to it later and go, what? So we're actually going to be talking about raising boys, which is a weird thing to talk about when there aren't any here. men here.
I did it a lot by myself, so maybe it's not that weird.
Yeah, it does, especially when they're little, kind of fall to us. So, yeah, we can talk about it if we want to. Yeah. We know what we're talking about. So, speaking of which, could you just give everybody listening a brief history background as to why you are equipped to discuss what it is like to raise boys?
I would. My first son was born in
1983. Wow.
I know. That means he's 38 this year. The next one was born in 1985. And then Sarah came along in 87. They're not actually just perfectly 2 years apart. Because Ken was in the military, I spent a lot of time by myself, sometimes 6 month stretches. I think that one of the things that I have to keep in mind a lot of times is that it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but this was before the internet.
Yes.
And so a lot of what I did was just by instinct because sometimes I took some magazines like Good Housekeeping and I forget the name of the other
one. Oh, that's an interesting name drop given today's content.
No. This was a long time ago. And I remember like getting the magazine offers in the mail, you know, get these and then it'll be only $15. And for you can have three different magazines coming. And then I realized by doing that it's the same thing over and over again with different names on it. Never mind.
It's the same cookie recipe, just with different colored frosting.
Yeah, and the crafts for Christmas. And those weren't child rearing magazines. But I'm just saying that every time I had a question, I couldn't go to the internet and Google it. And I was far away from family a lot of that time. So a lot of it was just thinking back and going, what did my parents do? And sometimes not thinking, you just, you know, doing what I had seen them do. And it just came out like that, which I think is what a lot of us do if we don't think about it. So I like to think that my boys came out pretty well, but it wasn't. Sometimes I think with my daughter, my daughter-in-law, I just watched them with their children and think, wow, they're so intentional. I'm really, really impressed. Here's a problem. Let's think about what we should do. Okay, let's implement that and see how it goes. Wow, I think I probably spanked first and asked questions later.
I second that. You did. I've always been really impressed, though, because you've said that before, that we're very intentional. I think it's hard not to be in the information age when we're being inundated with all of these parenting choices and ideas. And it just seemed a lot simpler for you. But I've always been impressed with the fact that you didn't grow up with a bunch of boys.
No.
And yet with your two, you just kind of understood them and what they needed and what made sense for them. And I think you did a heck of a job. They're both pretty impressive human beings.
Why, thank you. I think that part of what I had was time to watch them. We spent a lot of time together. I wasn't working. When my first one was really little, I needed to work and I worked at a daycare. And that taught me some things that I didn't want for my children.
Right.
And it impressed upon both of us that we should be the ones raising our children, not someone else, not a daycare. So that contributed to the factor of us deciding that however bad things get, I don't run out and get a job and leave the kids with someone else.
Right.
So I was home a lot with them. Because I loved them and liked being with them, I paid attention to them. And because I wanted to love and like being with them, I wanted them to be well-behaved. That was always my thought, was I want to like these kids as well as love them. So I'm not going to put up with a bunch of garbage that I wouldn't like in someone else's kids.
Right.
Why would I want to spend all day with these children if they're irritating me all the time?
And we hear that a lot. I could never stay at home with my kids. Well, maybe you should do something about
that. Yeah, isn't that really your fault?
So my situation is, I mean, those last comments probably sounded very judgy, but I am in no room to judge anybody. My situation is that I have four children, three of which are boys, and they are currently, correct me if I'm wrong, because I stumble over this all the time, they are 10, 7, and 4.
Yes.
The boys are. And there's a girl in there. So I, for a time, well, for, what was it, 8 years, stayed at home with my kids and very much was trying to do things as my mother did. This is how it's done. This is the right way. Unfortunately, my marriage ended. My choice. Sorry, not sorry. And I was in a position for a few years where I was a single mom. I still technically, legally am a single mom, although I have a pretty decent partner now that is helping me with those boys and the girl. I'm not leaving her out on purpose. She's still there. That's just not what we're talking about today. So I kind of understand both sides. I understand what it's like to be the stay-at-home mom, and I understand how important that is. And I also understand that sometimes that's not an option, and you kind of have to just go to plan B or F, as the case may be. I think I'm on plan J at this point. So we're coming at this both with different types of experiences, not the least of which that you were raising children in the 80s and 90s, and I am raising children in the here and now. So we're kind of going to talk about some of the differences between that, how it's different from when you were doing it, how it was when you were a child, how it was when, well, right now.
Okay.
So what would you say the most obvious difference is between how you raised your boys and how I'm being forced to raise mine?
How I raised them or what the world was like?
What the world was like.
That's a tricky question because I realized that my situation is not like everybody else's. So, like you said, we're not judging anybody who can't do what I did. I'm not saying if you don't make the decision to be a single income family in this world today and send your child to a daycare ever, that you're a bad parent and it's obvious that your children are going to come out badly. We did a lot of different things. I can't look at my situation and go, everyone should do this, because we just had a lot of different things going on. I kind of look at it in chapters, and it's easy to do that because there are such big chapter headings. We moved from one town where all my family was down to Colorado Springs because of the military. All of a sudden, we were alone. I didn't know anyone. And their dad was gone a lot. About half the time or more of the 18 months that we were there before we got sent to Germany. So by myself in a tiny little house in a neighborhood we didn't know wasn't a very nice one. But the kids were really little, and this is where Sarah was born. So mostly
I was born in the ghetto.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I never really thought about it like that, but you were. Drug dealers across the street.
It was a nice little neighborhood. So the world isn't that different than it was before.
No, not really, depending on where you are. And I guess that's part of what makes it hard, is that the world might not be that different from where we were at that time. But I had very young children there, and a lot of it was just letting them play. When my oldest was about 4 years old, I had never seen Legos before, and we visited someone who had a child in bed with a broken leg. And when we went to see him, he was just surrounded by these piles of Legos, and I was going, oh, what are those? And I saw the little men, and I went, oh my gosh, those are so cute! My son is going to love those. And so I went and looked at the Legos and said that they're only for children like, what, eight and up or something like that?
Something
and he was
like
4.
That.
And I said, I don't care. This child has never deliberately put anything in his mouth if he could help it without examining it first. So I'm pretty sure we don't have to worry about the swallowing problem. And from then on, it was just taking things apart and putting them together and looking to see how things worked and letting him do that. He wasn't the destructive kind where I couldn't, every time I turned around, one of my appliances was in pieces, but he always was watching to see how things were working, and I watched him watch. I don't understand how anything works, but I could see that that's what he was thinking about. And letting him go outside and play in the dirt. We had a dirt yard then because our landlord thought that was the best way to take care of a place, was not have to worry about the grass.
He might be onto something.
And Seth loved it. He couldn't sit down without digging in the dirt anywhere, ever, if there was dirt. He never sat still inside without a pen or a pencil in his hand to draw. if he didn't have something to take apart and put back together again. So that's the kind of things that I mean by watching them, just seeing what it is, what are they thinking when they look at something? What's going on in that brain? Mm-hmm. I think that's really important because I am a girl, to watch them and observe what they are observing.
And there is something to be said with that. That is not a luxury that all of us mothers have. I no longer have the time to just watch my children and observe their behavior. And I try to do the best that I can, but that's maybe an hour in the morning and a few hours in the evening and some time on the weekends. It gets much harder when they don't have the time and the space to just be. You know the saying, you are who you are when no one is watching. Well, mom's always watching, right?
Or someone else is if your child's in daycare or something.
Right.
Someone's always watching.
Yep.
I think one thing that's important about that is that, okay, so you can't sit and just gaze at them. I didn't do that. That was boring. I don't mean that I sat around gazing into their eyes. I had plenty to do myself. Believe it or not, as a stay-home mom, I always had something to do.
Weird.
I know, but I knew where they were and what they were up to. And when I had more than one, I was listening to what they were saying, to things like that. I'm thinking one of the important things about raising women, moms raising boys, is that if you can't watch them every second to see what they're doing, you can keep in mind that just because they do things that are different than you would doesn't mean they're wrong.
Right.
So I think you can do that at any time of the day, just to think, what a stupid thing to do. What were you thinking? Huh. I wonder what they were thinking, rather than, you know, you're grounded or whatever your response would be because you're frustrated and tired.
Right. That I don't know why, but as soon as you said that, I was reminded that I have always thought that socks and underwear go in the top drawer, shirts go in the middle, and pants go on the bottom, right?
Yes.
Well, my oldest son is a lot like me, but also completely different. And he decided that he was going to rearrange his dresser. But the shirts are on the top because that's the top of the human, right? And the pants are still on the bottom, but the socks and underwear in between because they go under all the other things.
In between.
And at first I was going, I can't handle that. That's not the right way. And I finally just had to let him do his thing. And he always knows where his clothes are and he never forgets to put underwear on. So mission accomplished.
Right. It's his dresser and it is actually organized. So it's not wrong. It's just different.
Yes. And I guess I'm just grateful for the grace to know that my son did that, because at some point I had time to observe that. So one of the things that you mentioned that is very, very different between then and now, in terms of, you know, 80s and 90s era and today, is the internet. And I know that from the minute I started having babies, I was researching all kinds of stuff. That's just kind of my thing. I thrive on learning. And so I was inundating myself, really, with what does this doctor say about babies? And I filled my head with all sorts of garbage and saved some of it and threw most of it away. Kind of like when I first started having babies, I accumulated a lot of baby stuff, mm-hmm. and came to the conclusion that you really just need onesies, diapers, wipes, and a blanket.
Right.
And a backup blanket because they vomit all the time.
Mm-hmm. So, good job. That's about it.
I really didn't hold on to a lot of the information, but the stuff that I did, it stuck.
I do remember, though, at one point, I think I said, you need to just stop reading all this stuff.
It was kind of like, ooh, I felt something. I probably have angina or whatever. Stop, Sarah. But just out of curiosity, earlier today, I Googled raising boys, just raising boys. And I'm sure you could do the same thing at home. Everybody's algorithms are different because Google is creepy. So you may come up with something completely different. But one of the articles that came up at the very top of the page was from goodhousekeeping.com.
Oh, they're still
out.
That's
why I thought it was funny that you had Good Housekeeping, because I'm not a fan anymore. This article is actually from 2019, but again, it's still popping up at the top of Google, so it must be really great, right?
Or nobody's done anything else since then.
Right.
All has been said.
Yes. It's entitled An Age-by-Age Guide to Raising Boys According to Child Development Experts. That's another thing that I think is very different, is that now we entrust everything to the experts. You said that you did things very intuitively with your kids just from watching them, and okay, he's doing this and this needs to be the reaction. Now it's like parents don't feel equipped to do what God has equipped them to do, right. they have to turn to the experts and say, what do I do?
I'm sure that's by design. That was possible, too, when I was that age. There were TV shows that you could watch, but they weren't always about children. And you had Dr. Spock, who in the 60s or 70s started telling people how they should treat their children emotionally. I remember when Oprah was new. And it was just
Watching Oprah when she was done. Yeah. I watched her last season.
but then it was just sort of an interesting, entertaining, informational kind of thing. There wasn't like the blatant agenda that you see now in shows like that. So, and it was also sometimes like I would have the TV on for company.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore because I can't stand it. But there was a point when I was alone enough that actually was a thing to do.
That I do not recommend that. If you are a young mom and you are at home, please do not watch. Well, you can't watch Oprah anymore. Do not watch Dr. Phil. Do not watch Nightline. That poisoned me in many ways. And I'm sure it added to my postpartum depression after that first baby.
I bet it did.
This is from the experts. So we have to listen, right? Keep them growing in the right direction with these parenting tips. And it breaks it down into different age groups. The first age group is the toddler years. And the number one recommendation from these experts, you listening, folks? Avoid gender stereotypes. Here's what they have to say about that. Young children need the world to be as simple as possible.
Onesies, wipes, and a blanket? Is that what you said?
Boy, girl.
Right.
Pretty simple, right? No. So putting people in a pink or blue box is an easy way for them to process the world.
Right.
Wrong.
Oh.
I guess. Somebody really fancy said that. You can look up the article yourself. However, once that way of thinking is in place, it's difficult to undo it. Maybe because that's... True. Instead, avoid teaching gender stereotypes in the first place. Offer a variety of toys and activities, even if they're typically considered to be for girls. Provide books and movies featuring characters of each gender and in non-traditional gender roles such as male nurses and female athletes. Also be mindful of how your family divvies up chores. Take turns with your partner doing so-called feminine and masculine household tasks, and watch what you say and how you treat the opposite sex. Avoiding gender stereotypes will pay off in the long run.
It will pay off. Everything pays off in the long run. We just might not like what we get paid. Well, I wanted to say something from the very first sentence or whatever it was, the heading. What did it say about raising them the right way or the right direction?
The right way, according to the experts.
Okay.
What did it say? Going back.
Let's make sure.
Keep them growing in the right direction.
Okay.
With these parenting tips.
Because I think that this is where so many of us have gone wrong over the last many decades, is that we don't believe there is a right direction. There's a right direction for me, and it might not be the right direction for you. People for thousands of years have believed there was a right direction. Now, they didn't always agree on what it was, but in their cultures that they lived in, there was kind of this general agreement of what that was. And now we don't have that anymore, and that's part of the problem. And the gender thing when they're toddlers is exactly the kind of thing that's intended to make them out of balance so that they don't know which direction to go.
Right.
So I'm already mad.
Well, as soon as I saw the headline, I was mad, but not mad. Just it's getting to the point where this is so everywhere that it's not even worth my emotions anymore. But it's interesting to me that they're saying, well, you know, we need to keep things as simple as possible. So red and blue or pink and blue box. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Because it's been working.
Little kids see people and they go, that's a man, that's a woman, that's young, that's old, that's fat, that's skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes their adults can get offended by children's bluntness, and yet it's just very black and white for them. It's not a personal thing.
Right. One of the things we have to do to them is teach them not to tell the truth in every single situation.
Right.
We get mad at them for lying, but then we tell them, no, you can't tell Aunt whoever it is that she's fat. Well, she is. I know. Sometimes telling the truth means don't say anything.
Tell the truth in your mind.
Yeah.
I remember reading an article years ago about a woman who was a devout feminist. And she had a baby. I'm pretty sure she had a baby all by herself. I mean,
right.
You know, yeah. With a sperm donor or something. And decided that she was going to raise that child completely gender neutral until that child was maybe 3 years old. It was a boy. The child was about 3 years old. She made him a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And he chewed the sandwich into the shape of a gun and started making gun noises. And the article was about how that was kind of the moment where she realized it doesn't really matter what kind of sexist ideals I force on my child. He is who he is, and I can't do anything about that.
Right. And you can confuse them a lot. Oh, they yes. can feel badly about feeling like a boy. Yes. A boy can. And a girl can feel like she shouldn't feel like a girl. And I think maybe all of us have some of those issues growing up. For various reasons, like we're trying to please someone who we think wants us to be something else, and they probably don't. But that's just, I knew someone who tried that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give all my boy just boy things. He's going to have dolls and all the options. And those dolls didn't have all their body parts and their hair and things, you know, when he was a toddler, because it was more fun to sacrifice them to some yes. god than, or, you know, shoot them with your peanut butter and jelly sandwich than it was to take care of them and nurture them, because that's what they do.
Well, I think there's a big difference. I have a girl and three boys, and we have all sorts of toys in our house. And sometimes the boys will play with my daughter's stuff, and a lot of times she ends up playing with their stuff because she's outnumbered. And I played with cars and Legos because I was the only girl. And sometimes one of my brothers, not the oldest one because he was way too cool for that, but the other one played with Barbies with me. And there was no shame in that, but there were obvious natural gravitations. When the oldest boy got involved in playing with my Barbies, they ended up tying a rubber band around their necks and then tying the other end of the rubber band to the doorknob and pulling them down and letting them go so that their heads would pop off when they hit the doorknob. That's not the same thing as accessorizing, right. Which is what I was doing, and assigning them all characters and voices. And
right,
stuff.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you start, you have a boy, just a boy, and you start giving him toys of all different gender stereotypes in order to let him know and indoctrinate him on, we're going to expand your horizons, then you just get to choose whatever you want. Take him to the toy store and let him pick out his own toys. You don't buy right. him things and then go, here, son, play with these and these. Mm-hmm. Here's G.I. Joe and Barbie.
Right, because even that goes against what we're talking about as far as basics, is watching them and see what they gravitate toward. And the reason you want to do that is not so that they'll end up the right gender. That's right. That's really pretty basic, and they mostly do, whether you like it or not, but so that you can see where their tendencies are, what kinds of things they're going to be good at, because we all want our kids to be good at what they do. Many of us actually do want to choose what that will be because we have some ideas about what's cooler to be good at. But if you try to force them in those directions, you're not going to have good results. So why in any other direction either?
I have a problem with that whole concept anyway, because I don't think kids need toys. I think they need to make their own.
Well, there is that. Yes.
So the second point that they offer as a tip from the experts is to teach boundaries. Now, does that headline sound pretty decent to you?
Yeah.
Little boys need boundaries?
I'm afraid to say yes. Everyone needs boundaries.
I was encouraged when I saw it, and then I kept reading. You don't have to go into sexual boundaries at this stage, but it's important to let your son know very early that he has the right to determine who can touch his body, along with when and how, says Mike Domitz, the author of Can I Kiss You?
Isn't how old are nice? These kids?
This is toddler age. So that means everyone, including grandma, pay attention, Diane, has to get permission before kissing or hugging him. If he refuses, don't force it. Sometimes it's good to offer the option of a kiss, a handshake, or a high five, or a wave, but again, he's allowed to say no to all three. Then, teach him other people have the same rights. He isn't allowed to touch someone or their belongings without their permission.
There's just enough truth in that.
There really, really dangerous. Is. Well, what irritated me is that when I saw the headline, teach boundaries. Okay, great. Boys need boundaries.
Everyone does.
They need rules, right? But it's not what you think. It's not boundaries and this is how you will behave and you will not be allowed to behave outside of this. It's very sexualized.
Right. That's
all we're talking about. They're talking about boundaries in terms of your body and the safety of your body and other people's bodies and what? I don't get it. P.S. I'm not going to ask your permission before I spank your butt. And because I gave birth to you, I don't have to ask permission to grab you and kiss you on the forehead.
No,
just so everybody knows.
But
if my boys listen to this later in life.
Yeah. At the same time, I think that's another thing that people should observe. I just got to meet one of my grandchildren for the first time. She was 7 months old at the time. She'd never seen me before. I wanted to grab her and kiss those cheeks because that's what I do.
So did Auntie Sarah.
But there was no reason in the world she should appreciate that. Right now, Mom is where it's at, and she didn't know me from anyone. Why would I force that on her? Now, right. I did. I think I got everybody at least once while they were here, but that's not the same thing. And that's just respecting other people's, the way they function in a lot of ways. I can't even remember being young enough to want people hugging and kissing me when I was a little kid. I just wasn't comfortable with that sort of display. Didn't have anything to do with sex.
Right. But this is something that I don't think it's a bad principle, but I've seen it taken to such an extreme. I have seen videos of parenting classes where the coaches are encouraging the parents, okay, now it's time to change baby's diaper. Now, baby can't understand yet, but this is for both of you to get used to the idea that you need to ask permission before touching that baby's body. And so the coaches would have these parents lay their babies down and go, hi, baby, you need a diety change. Do I have permission to touch your bottom? With babies. You just crapped all over my bed. I'm changing your butt.
And a lot of other things, too.
It's so typical for people to take something that there's nothing wrong with the principle of you need to respect other people's space.
Right.
And take it to the extreme of what I was just talking about. But the other thing that I wanted people to note as we go through this is that when I think of what I would tell people about raising boys, none of these are on my list. And this is the entire list, is this indoctrination crap. So the next one is prevent feelings of superiority. You don't want your boys to feel superior to anybody. One survey found that nearly 40% of fourth grade boys in the U.S. feels boys are smarter than girls. To prevent this line of thinking, encourage mixed gender friendships. The more you encourage boys to spend time with girls and see them as individuals, the harder it is for them to stereotype the whole group or think boys are better.
Okay. There are several ways that that's stupid. One of them is that to prevent people from feeling like they're smarter than other people, what do you have to do to them?
Right.
You have to make them feel stupid. And we're not allowed to do that. So this is very contradictory. I don't know how to act. The other thing it doesn't say is how many girls think that girls are smarter than boys.
Right.
Because I would think that just as big a percentage of girls think they're smarter than boys because they look at boys and go, I can't believe he's shoving that in his mouth. Again, and that kind of thing. And, you know, the thing changes as they get older. But girls usually do think that boys are pretty stupid up until a certain point. And maybe even after that, but they realize that they want them anyway. There's only so many things you can say about something that doesn't make any sense.
Right. But how many times in your teaching experience, because I'm thinking back to mine, how many times did you see the boys on one side of the room and the girls on the other side of the room and the boys going, oh, yeah, well, girls are stupid, and the girls go, boys smell funny. It's just like the battle of the sexes begins at birth, and that doesn't even have to come from the parents. That's just how kids work. They faction into groups and they attack the other groups. That's the nature of humanity.
Right. But the other thing about that is that part of the reason this is so necessary is because the way we have ended up making our whole society is that you put everybody in groups and you get along with your age group and your color group and your gender group or whoever it is. And you do everything they're doing so you don't stand out. You teach them to follow the fads and say the things they're saying and play the games they're playing. Whether you mean to or not, that's what you do when you group them like that and insist on the groups. That doesn't make any sense either. Encourage these friendships? You don't encourage friendships. I mean, you can put people together in certain situations, but there's nothing you can do about a friendship.
No. But then it also happens very naturally. When I was in first grade, my group of friends, it was two boys and another girl and me. And nobody told us to be friends with each other. We just liked each other.
Right.
And we also tore each other to pieces sometimes. And then the next day we were friends again.
Right. And when I was in the really younger grades, I tended to like a lot of the boys better than the girls because I thought girls were dumb.
Right.
I didn't want to do what they were doing. The, what do you call the little hand thing and the cat's cradle? And we sit around and all we can play is hopscotch. And they're over there doing actual interesting things, which, you know, at home with my sisters, we were building forts and living off the land by harvesting, you know, weeds and pretending like they were wheat and stuff like that. And at school, they're playing patty cake. I like boys better. And then, but after a while, it gets very uncomfortable because they don't want you around.
Right.
And I knew I was a girl. I'm going to end up being a wife and a mom and a caregiver, nurturer type. I'm going to do it the way I want to.
And I'm not going to play patty cake. No. While I'm doing it. Oh, so the next tip from the experts is encourage emotions. I have some mixed feelings about this because I have feelings because I'm a girl. Never tell your son, big boys don't cry, or you're acting like a girl. In addition to reinforcing gender stereotypes, that type of talk can actually be harmful. If boys are cut off from honestly communicating hard feelings, the energy of the upset doesn't simply diminish or go away. It can drive misbehavior and taint how a boy feels about himself and life in general, says some PhD person who wrote a book about raising boys.
Okay. True.
I don't entirely disagree.
Right.
I can, without sharing too much personal information, I can say that my oldest boy he's pretty sensitive. He is the oldest and most aware of what has transpired in the separation of his parents, and he has asked the most questions. That's just what makes him feel secure, is to kind of know what's going on. And so he and I have had a very open dialogue, and I've had to tell him before, it's okay if you're mad at me. It's okay if you're upset about this. It's okay to feel those feelings. I was going to say on the other hand, but it's on the same hand.
Right.
Life is rough, little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to buck up and keep going.
Right.
So I have always tried to create a space for my boys to feel feelings and get them out and speak openly about them. But it usually concludes with, okay, now suck it up and drive on. Because mm-hmm. the whole rest of your life is going to be like this.
And the other part of that is, go ahead and be angry, because that seems to be the emotion that boys are most comfortable with. But you don't get to take it out on everyone right. else.
Well, even scripture says, be angry and do not sin.
Right.
You have the right to be angry that your parents split up. You have the right to be angry that your sister's being mean. You have the right to be angry, but you don't have the right to hit people and throw fits and destroy things and act like a jerk.
Right.
And that's what, in my house, as for me in my house, that's what we mean by suck it up and drive on, is, okay, now pull yourself together and do the right thing.
Right.
No matter how crappy life is for you. And I think that there is something very important about teaching boys how to feel their feelings, but then move on with life. And Joseph and I were talking not too long ago about this sort of thing. And he was basically just apologizing. I'm sorry, I don't have the range of emotions that people seem to think that I should have. And I said, I honestly am glad that you don't, because I have such a wide range. I need one of us to be sane. And it seems to me like it used to be that women picked men who could help the family survive in a tough situation. And now women pick men by I don't know what criteria. And so for me, when I look at someone like Joseph, I don't want him to have deep emotional roots, and I don't want him blubbering about everything that happened during his day. I want to know that if someone breaks into my house, he's going to be able to protect us. I want to know that if society collapses and we're starving to death, he's going to be able to go out and kill something for us to eat. That's what I need in a man. I don't need you to sit there and watch Call the Midwives with me and cry every time a baby is born, because I got that on lock all by myself.
But you said something again that's part of the problem. You said, suck it up and drive on means feel the feelings and then go do the right thing.
What is the right thing?
Exactly. Right. What are you teaching your children is the right thing? We can't leave them. We can't leave them without boundaries. We can't say you can be anything you want, including a girl if you're a boy and a boy if you're a girl, and expect them to know how to do the right thing, because you're saying there really isn't a right thing.
Right.
So I want you to just not bother me too much and be anything you want to be.
Just I'm over there.
Yeah. But I want to be proud of you, which also implies a standard. But I'll be proud of you for anything you do. Those two things are mutually exclusive. You can't be proud of someone for doing the wrong thing. And we all know that there are right things and wrong things. And if we don't teach them, there are kids don't have boundaries.
Anybody feeling triggered yet?
I hope so.
So now we're moving on to middle school age.
Oh,
foster
dear.
Healthy interactions. Now, I would look at this and think, yeah, like, don't hit your sister.
Right. It's a continuation of the same thing we've been working on, because that's a lifelong issue of self-control. Right.
But they start this off by citing a statistic that 90% of girls have been sexually harassed at least once in their life by the end of high school. What does that even mean? And we won't beat that horse to death any more than we already have, because we talked about this on a previous show. But it was just interesting to me that we've already discussed like body safety in the toddler years. And now we're expanding on that. You need to have healthy interactions with girls, because you're supposed to have girlfriends, but you need to respect their bodies and your body and blah, 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 body, body, body. Why are we so concerned with everybody's bodies?
Because we're teaching kids that everything's about sex, and we have been since they were toddlers.
Oh.
I remember one time when I was probably about 16, I was working, and just was in a situation. I was working at Arby's, and a lot of the guys who worked there were football players or wrestlers, because the boss was trying to make it easier for them to have a job and work with them with their schedules and things like that. So there were a lot of them working there. And one day I was doing dishes, and one of the boys came up and blew in my ear. I didn't call the cops. I elbowed him in the chest, and he went, "Oh, I bet she didn't like that." And it never happened again.
Right.
Should he have been in jail? He was the star football player. We're not going to put him in jail. Now there's the attitude. I know. That's from the attitude that we were talking about before.
Yes.
Just kidding. But it never crossed my mind to tell anyone.
No.
I elbowed him and moved on. And he probably got soap suds in his face while I was doing it.
I would say if you have a girl, this is just a freebie. If you have a girl, teach her to wear really thick-soled shoes. Because that's what I did in high school, and there were a lot of bruises on a lot of shins.
Oh, good. So my sister was a kicker. I was more of a dirty looker and sort of had an aura.
You don't need to physically attack anyone.
Yeah. Most guys didn't try anything because they didn't like the look on my face, which is, you know, has its pros and cons.
It's interesting that we're talking about being like scary and tough, because the next one is tame tough guy behaviors. Again, talking about little boys. Unfortunately, social expectations can make adolescent boys feel that they have to be tough, aggressive, or even violent, says somebody. This person recommends acknowledging those pressures directly. That might mean telling your son, "I know a lot of boys will say you need to be rough and tough, but there are a lot of ways to be a boy or a man," she says. Then share models you think are good ones, such as older boys or men in your own family who honor peaceful conflict resolution or are compassionate and caring, or celebrities or other public figures you think model those tendencies.
Once again, there's not very much wrong with that.
No.
Other than it's a little bit confusing, because this person is saying, that they might see people acting like that, rough and tough, and they don't have to do that. But at the same time, I'm thinking, who's acting like that? Because all these little boys have been taught to act like girls. So who are they watching? Right. What's making them want to be like that?
Conservatives from Wyoming.
Probably, yeah. They've been listening to too many podcasts.
Well, with my oldest boy, he has a friend of his who was picking on him recently. And it was a very mild picking on-y thing.
The thing boys do.
Yes. And I found myself in kind of this weird, I don't really know what to say, because I understand that, you know, in the Christian circles, we would say, well, Jesus says to turn the other cheek. And if it wasn't really bad, then you should turn the other cheek, right? But then on the other hand, I'm thinking, this is two 10, 11, 12-year-old boys. They're in that age range. He needs to stand up for himself and sock the other guy in the arm and be like, dude, you can't do that to me.
Right.
Or it will get worse.
That's called boundaries.
Yes. But I think that it's healthy for boys especially to put each other in check and to have some sort of pecking order. It's also ridiculously important for boys to be put in circumstances where they have to reach their limits and test themselves so that they can know by the time they grow up, I can protect my family. Now, that's very sexist to assume that the man would be responsible for protecting his family or his country or whatever else. But where I come from, that's still how it is. And so the way that little boys learn that, it's like baby lions that attack each other, and they're playing, but they're practicing for hunting for when they grow up.
Right.
Little boys need to beat the crap out of each other sometimes.
And it's not doing that that gives us the bullies.
Right.
In a group of boys who have learned how to know when to punch somebody in the arm and know when not to, that's where they learn how not to be a bully. Because there needs to be somebody who could knock you on your butt if you get out of line.
Right. Like mama.
Well, if it comes to that, you know, I think a lot of the bullies that you know of don't have anyone, including their parents, telling them where the line is, and it's been going on for a long time. There are all kinds of reasons for that. I'm not saying that we should allow bullying. I'm not saying that we don't care about the bullies. I'm saying that there are reasons that they get to that, and a lot of it is that we have our boundaries all screwed up. And that's what this article's telling you to do. Have some boundaries, not the ones we've always had.
Right.
It's sexist to have those boundaries, to think that a boy should grow up thinking that he should protect his family. I'm sorry, but they already think that, whether right. you teach them that or not. That's not saying that your daughter is not going to learn how to defend herself and shoot as well as or better than her brothers or whatever else it may be. But we're pretty sure that she's probably always going to be not quite as strong as they are, probably not quite as big as they are, and might need their help sometimes.
Right.
So let's train them each accordingly. The way we know that people work, and this is part of the problem with everything we talk about, is that we are denying human nature.
Or taking the nasty parts of human nature and amplifying them. Saying it's okay if you behave that way, just do it within these boundaries.
Right. But we're sort of being disingenuous about amplifying them. We're really trying to get everybody to just get along. Couldn't we just all get along? Not if you haven't told anybody what the boundaries are. Sorry.
Get along with what? You can't play a game without rules.
Right.
And that's why little kids play that. That's why we played kick the can. That's why we played baseball. That's why we played whatever we played when we were growing up. Because you learn this is the standard according to which everybody is going to play. And if you break the rule, hey, that's a foul ball. That doesn't count. Well, who says? I don't know. And now it's chaos and it's not fun anymore.
Well, you even see that in little kids playing house. That's why one thing that drives me crazy about that is, especially with the little girls, they're talking all the time. So let's say that you're so-and-so and you do this and you do that. I don't want to do that.
Pretend
that's
like.
What we, yeah, yeah. So this is what you have to do, and then you're going to do that, and then you're going to do that, and then you're going to do that. I don't want to. Fine, you're not coming to my house.
Right.
And that's what I get a lot of times with the grandkids, is someone coming down the stairs and going, she's not letting me live with her. Oh, please. But one child has done something out of line according to someone's rules, where they that they learned somewhere, made up themselves or whatever. It's about control. And I get to say that you're not living with me. I don't even know how to deal with that with a four-year-old.
That's just preparation for a divorce right there.
Oh.
All right, moving on to high school. Be explicit about consent. With high school age boys, you don't have to tiptoe around issues of consent anymore. We can
have
just openly.
Have we been?
I guess not. I mean, I guess so. This person whose name I can't pronounce recommends laying out what is considered sexual assault, how to ask and give permission when it comes to sexual activity, and how drugs and alcohol can affect a person's judgment and ability to give consent. Also, since older boys attend school with younger students, make sure you cover the legal age of consent in your state and age differences in relationships. So, we are just assuming that it is completely inevitable that your child is going to be in really hairy situations.
Right.
Because they have all these girl friends from...
That you encouraged when
they
were,
right?
toddlers.
And so now hormones are raging and inevitably they're going to be alone with these people and... Somebody's going to do something with somebody. So now we have to teach them the boundaries of make sure you ask permission before you feel her up. Make sure you ask permission before you whatever. We're not going to go into explicit details.
But we are going to assume that they're all having sex.
Yes.
So please just don't do it in any way that's illegal at the moment.
Right. It's okay if it's psychologically damaging to you. Or physically damaging to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, have we completely stopped talking about teen pregnancy and STDs?
Those don't happen. If you've been trained like this since you were a toddler, that probably doesn't happen.
Just don't break the law.
Right.
Because that's all we expect from our kids once they get to
right.
high
Right. Don't
school
do anything that could actually get you spending the rest of your life paying for the support right. of a child.
Because if you get an STD, it can be treated, and if you get her pregnant, we can have it taken care of.
Right.
So really, the only thing we're worried about is you going to jail. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So the last one is funny to me. Stay engaged. Just as parents are advised to have special one-on-one time with their young children, the same advice holds true when those become adolescents. Go and sit next to your son and do whatever he's doing, whether it's watching sports or playing a game. They're having to tell you... to pay attention to your children. Don't forget that even though they're adolescents, they're still your children. They
and even
left
though they're
yet.
Out having sex with all their friends who are girls, well, or not.
And doing more adult things than you've ever done in your lifetime.
Right.
It is startling and overwhelming and saddening to me that what I think about other moms my age looking for information, that this is the information that they're
right,
getting.
Right.
Especially women who are possibly single moms where they're trying to find, you know, a positive male influence for their son and going, gee, what would that look like? Oh, I should find this mamby-pamby guy next door who's in touch with his emotions and blah, blah. Oh, he's also a pedophile. But he's teaching my son good emotional awareness or whatever.
They cry else. Together occasionally.
Right? It's so sad to me that that's what the experts are saying, and that any parent feels like they have to turn to an expert to know the difference between right and wrong and how to deal with their kid.
Again, there's that word right again.
Right.
How come you can do wrong things, but there is no right? We can't. It's judgmental if you say that something is right, but there can be just enough wrong to send you to jail. And I think
the
that's
only
the
thing,
confusing thing.
The only absolute truth is that what Hitler did was wrong.
Oh, yeah. But we... don't really know what he did anymore either. We just know that saying someone's a Nazi is bad.
Yes.
Did this article at the beginning tell you that it was all going to be about sex?
No.
That's
this
what
is how to raise boys.
And that's one of the scary things is that I was expecting some practical tips on dealing with their natural behavior. And what we're trying to do is make sure they don't actually have any natural behavior.
Right. That anything that makes them... notably masculine is put to bed, and everything that makes them what I don't even know what
androgynous
kind of a man would come out of that. It's
what we're finding out. I think we're going to know.
Oh yes,
if we don't already. But this kind of goes back to something that I feel like I regularly give sermons on this, but Something that happened over 100 years ago was that the scientific community started telling people that they weren't smart enough to figure out all these things on their own that they had been doing for thousands of years naturally. And it was a just weird thing that actually was between, from the things that I've read about the early 1900s, was this weird partnership between newspapers and magazines and patent medicines. Mm. How do we get people, how do we make our newspaper successful? Well, we need ads because we can't charge enough for the people to just buy the newspaper. So we got to have advertising. Who wants to advertise? People who can't get talk people into buying their stuff, because you don't have to advertise for the one general store in town. He's going to get customers no matter what. But the patent medicine guy coming through with his wagon needs somebody, you know, some way to convince people that they need what he has. The snake oil salesman. So he puts an ad in the paper and says, this has been scientifically proven to do everything, including curing cancer and death. And there weren't any rules about that. So we have, you know, we can talk about that too, but if you ought to feel really stupid sometimes for falling for some of this stuff when it all had to do with advertising.
Right.
It was about advertising, money, and power, which I think we know, but we don't really care because we want the stuff and we want to have whatever everyone else has. But it's been like 140, 50 years of the experts, in quotes, telling us we're not smart enough to figure this stuff out our own.
Right.
And by now, we don't even know that there was a time when there weren't any experts and people just figured stuff out on their own. So maybe one of my big tips about raising boys is stop checking on the internet.
Yes.
Don't read anything about how to raise boys. Don't listen to this podcast. No, because we're your friends and you can ask your friends, but don't let your friends refer you to an article they read.
Right.
Ask them where they get their ideas about what the truth is. There's only one place that truth comes from, and that's what you have to be focusing on.
That's so judgmental, Diana.
It's very judgmental. Ugh. It's discriminating too, and discerning. So discern. There is truth. We all know there has to be truth. Find out what truth is. Not your truth. Find out the truth and teach your children.
I think that's interesting that you went clear back to the 1800s and the ads and the snake oil and stuff. Because it seems to me like the experts have taken over to the point, and they were so smart about taking over the very first part of the process of parenting. Oh, you're pregnant? Well, you need help.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't go to a midwife who's been practicing midwifery for years and years and years and has delivered hundreds of healthy babies. You need to go to a doctor because there's something wrong with you and all these horrible things could happen. And they immediately question, they make a woman question her ability to give birth.
Yes.
And when it starts Excellent from point. There and you think, golly, I can't even do this most natural thing by myself. How could I possibly know how to breastfeed or how to discipline my child?
Well,
or how
and that's to- a big one. One of the earliest concoctions of science and big ad sellers was baby formula.
Right.
No longer is the milk God gave you good enough. This stuff we've put together with chemicals is actually what all babies need. Or it could be this other one. So you kind of get to decide between, you know, the which one has the most attractive can or
right.
the most convincing looking woman in the ad or whatever. Yeah, or the cheaper one.
And that's a whole other episode because I went off on this the other day and Joe's like, we should do a show on that because I'm just like, and then they do this and then they do this and they shouldn't do it anymore. There's too much interference from experts.
Yes.
Just leave parents alone and let them figure it out. One of the ways that you figure out what the right thing is by doing the wrong thing and going, oops, that didn't work. And that's one of the things that I would say is key to raising boys is letting them go, oops.
Right.
And then there being consequences. That's where the boundaries come from. Is there consequences for you doing dumb things that didn't work?
Mm-hmm.
So just out of curiosity, I asked Joseph earlier today if he had to come up with his top 10 list of things to teach a boy. And he was a little hesitant to do it because he doesn't have any children of his own and he feels woefully inadequate.
But he was a boy.
Yes. Which I think it's interesting that he feels woefully inadequate, because what parent amongst us is like, oh, yes, I'm completely adequate. And I thought it was a great list, so I just want to share it with everybody. The very first thing that came to his mind, this is just as they came to his mind, but it's not in order of importance. Responsibility through hard work. Make your boys do stuff. Make them mow the lawn. Make them take out the trash. And yes, that might sound really sexist because they're doing these big macho things, but my son started mowing lawns this year, and I can't remember what he was doing the other day, but he came back and said, ever since I started mowing lawns, that's so much easier for me. I think I'm getting stronger. Yes, that's the point. You need not to just get physically stronger, but to get mentally tougher and to get in the habit of pouring your energy into something productive that benefits others and not just yourself.
And one of the parenting tips you implied in there is that you may have to make them do this.
Yes, not that kid, but the next one.
Right, right. And lots of them, especially if they've been raised on goldfish snacks and video games to entertain them, they don't want to get up off the couch.
No.
But you have to do it. And that's your prerogative, your obligation to make them do uncomfortable things so that they can when it's absolutely necessary.
Yes. The next one was respect for women through their mother and sisters. You model for them, this is how you treat women. So instead of having these ridiculous conversations about body safety and boundaries and blah, 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 you treat their mother with respect and you treat their daughters with respect. And it's kind of like, Ken used to tell this story. Ken used to do this illustration where he would say, you know, when they're trying to teach bank tellers about counterfeit money, they don't show them a bunch of counterfeit money. They show them the real thing over and over and over all day, every day, so that when there's a counterfeit one, oh, red flag, there's something wrong with this one. If you, in your home, are constantly treating your wife, your sister, whatever, the women in your family in a certain way, I guess this is kind of to dads. We've been talking to moms, but you model for them, here's what it looks like, so that when they see something that doesn't look like that, it's a red flag. Oh, I don't like the way he's treating her.
But women have to do the same thing,
yes.
Especially if you are a woman who doesn't have that man to do that for you. You demand respect.
Yes.
You have the right and the obligation to demand respect. And then you also have to be respectable.
Yes.
So that you're not going against all the rules that you're giving them and then saying, but you have to respect me.
Right.
You can't get somebody to respect you by demanding, by verbally just saying, you should respect me. You have to show them why.
Ooh.
I know.
You should have seen that face she gave me when she did that. That was great. The next one was stand up for people weaker than you, which I thought was absolutely excellent. And the one following that was stand up for yourself. And we talked about that a little bit earlier. What does it mean to turn the other cheek? And what does it mean to stand up for yourself and others and say enough is enough? That's part of what's going wrong in this entire country, is that not enough good men have stood up to evil, to confront evil, and said, that's not going to fly here.
I picked up on something the last time I was reading through John that I hadn't noticed before and put together. There's a point where Jesus says, you know how I sent you out without your coat and without your extra stuff? Well, now I want you to sell all those things and get a sword. And Peter says, I have two of them. And he says, that's enough. Well, then the very next thing that happens concerning swords is that in the garden, the soldiers come to take Jesus away. So Peter pulls out his sword. I told you I had one, and here I am, ta-da, to save the day. And he cuts off the high servant's priest's ear. And Jesus says, don't do that. Put your sword back in its place. This is what the words mean there, is put your sword back in its place. He doesn't say, cast that horrible weapon from you and never take it up again. He says, put it in its place. And I went, oh, okay, that makes so much sense. We're always going, well, Jesus said, turn the other cheek.
And he who lives by the sword dies by the
right.
sword.
People so, yeah, so you may. If you live by the sword, you probably will die by the sword. You might die by the sword just because you're a believer, but he's saying there's a place for it. You don't live by the sword. You just be prepared to use it when it's time.
Mm. We'll come back to that one then.
Okay.
Because this kind of ties up with that. The next one from Joseph is loyalty. I know some people do the whole blood is thicker than water. We've kind of had to, Joseph and I have rebuilt new families because our other families
turned out great. Blood wasn't thicker than water.
Right. But loyalty is a really, really important thing. If you have a friend or a loved one that has had your back, you have their back.
And really, that's one of those things that you can't teach by just telling them. No. You have to be loyal.
No.
You have to show.
That's why you should have a dog.
Ah.
Because nothing can teach you loyalty like that dog.
That's right. That's why they named them Fido.
Yes. So this one's coming a little later in the list. Not, again, this is not order of importance, but faith is a really big deal. Generosity and humility were next on the list. Generosity to me means taking care of people, sharing what you have, not being a stingy butthead.
Right.
And humility means knowing that you're not perfect and that you're not 10 foot tall and bulletproof.
Right.
And that you have flaws and that's okay.
Well, this came to me too while we were talking about something else and we just sort of moved on, but humility and meekness, Aristotle talked about them as the center between two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have humility, the one extreme would be being too proud and the other extreme would be going around going, I guess I'll just eat worms because right. No one loves me. And meekness is power under restraint. Jesus was meek. He wasn't weak. He was holding in. He had the power to hold the universe together and he did not kill us with his eyeballs, you know, just by looking at us. That's meekness. I could, and that's how we are with our children. I could snap your neck.
Right.
But I'm not going to.
I got you into this world. I could take you out and make another one just like you.
Right. That's meekness, not going around acting like a girl because boys are mean.
Right.
So it's the finding
that.
Which
can't say acting like a girl because that's implying that women are weaker and that's sexist.
Oh, goodness.
You're not a quick learner, are you?
No, I'm not. That's why you have to get rid of the old people before you can change the world.
Yes. Number 9 was toughen up. Life is hard. And we talked about that earlier. That doesn't mean that you can't have feelings. It doesn't mean you can't show your feelings. It means there is a time and a place for the feelings, and then there's a time and a place for shoving them down and moving on. Because life is hard. And if you are going to be a good man, there's that word good again.
I know.
And you're going to be a provider and a protector for your family. You got to be tough. And the world is ugly and scary and mean, and it's out to kill you and destroy you. And you need to be tough.
Right. And
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
You can have feelings, but no one should be controlled by them.
No.
That, again, that's a total lack of boundaries if you're constantly controlled by your feelings, because you're going to feel differently from minute to minute, from, you know, not just day to day, but hour to hour, and you can change your mind. You have to know, I feel this way, but this is the right direction. Now I feel this way, but this is the right direction. I'm going to bring myself back onto the path, and I'm going to keep going the right direction.
This is not even a sexist thing. My daughter has been hysterical before, and I had to get down on the ground and get in her face and say, we don't quit, and pick her up and make her keep doing whatever it was that she was supposed to be doing, with snot and tears running down her face and everything else. Yeah, cry, scream in my face. I don't care, but you are going to do this and you're going to finish and you're not going to quit.
And you didn't even ask her permission, did you?
No.
And I started to say that earlier too, is part of the reason they don't get to tell us what they want us to do is because they don't see the big picture.
Right.
When you ask a baby if they want their diaper changed, they're going to say no. They don't know the consequences of never doing that.
Right.
Of waiting until they feel like it, till they're in the mood.
To a 3-year-old boy who doesn't want to take a bath, what
typhoid, you know,
14th century England smelled like. Right. We don't want to go back there.
And why is that bad? Because bad smells usually indicate bad health and all kinds of other things. But yeah, it's like telling, you know, deciding that God doesn't know what's best for us is that he has the big picture. We have the big picture, and it's okay to say, I know more than you do.
Right. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the
right.
earth?
And where were you when I learned how to go to the bathroom?
Right.
I know how this is done. I taught you.
And when you get really good at doing it my way, you can come up with your own creative way to
exactly.
oppose me.
Exactly. That's true in parenting and in teaching.
Yes. So we have responsibility through hard work, respect for women, standing up for people weaker than you, standing up for yourself, loyalty, faith, generosity, humility, toughening up. Yes, toughening up.
Yes, toughening up.
And last but not least, firearm safety.
Ah, yes. And that's for everyone.
Yes. Keep your sword in its place.
Right.
Because the enemy is coming.
Which means you have to know where the place is.
Yes. Yeah.
And then when you pull it out, you have to know what to do with it.
Really well. You have to have mowed enough lawns to be able to lift and wield a sword.
That's right. Well, we were reading the matchlock gun a few weeks ago, and I don't think it said in the book. I think you looked it up that those things weighed 15 pounds.
Yeah.
Your oldest son says, I don't think that sounds like so much. I said, okay, let's go get something that weighs 15 pounds. All right, now you hold that up in front of you.
Yes, away from your body, okay. Please. And then try to hold it still so that you're aiming with some sort of accuracy.
Right, and then don't forget that it's going to kick back like something you never felt before.
So hopefully you've enjoyed listening to us blather on about raising boys. Hopefully you've learned something. Hopefully we've inspired you to keep doing the right thing, because there are other people out there who still think like you do. If you are a mother or father of young boys, fight the good fight. Finish the race. What's the other one?
Keep the faith.
Keep the faith. That's right. And keep doing the right thing. And if you haven't been doing the right thing, there's still time.
Yep. Start doing the right thing.
And if you don't know what that is, give us a call. Because we have it all figured out, right, Diane?
There are places where you can find that out.
Yeah.